Good evening. When we first become interested in Zen practice, we naturally have many questions. Very natural. And it's a usual way for most people when they first come. Lots of questions, but actually the best way to begin Zen practice is to have no questions, or not to let them come out. In other words, the best approach to starting practice is to set aside our questions and to simply jump in to practice. The important questions will eventually find their answers through our practice. So when we first come and have this series of questions, they may seem very relevant and very important, very logical thing to ask. But actually, when we take a step back and look at the questions, they are actually about ourself and not so much about the practice. In other words, when we ask about the practice, we are really asking, what will I get? Will my effort be worth it? Most of you know it's now very famous question asked of Suzuki Roshi in the 60s by a young man new to practice in San Francisco. He said, "I'm new. Please tell me about Zen." And the Roshi said to him, "We sit in meditation every morning and you're welcome to join us." So he's really saying, just jump in. Set aside your thinking mind. So when we have all these questions, before we start to practice, we feel like it's something outside of ourselves. Something we're looking at, something we're trying to understand. It's outside, so we have these questions. You know, it's like if you have to buy a new car. You touch everywhere, you open this and that, you press various buttons, you try to find out as much as you can about this device that you may make part of your life. But our practice isn't like some material thing like that. So before we start, we are outside, and the practice then, from a distance, seems to be some kind of technique. Something that will satisfy our needs, that will transform us into somebody who has no needs. That's what we're looking for. Something that will resolve all of our questions, some technique. And usually this is what happens for folks who come the first time, and it's not wrong. It's natural. But in the beginning, it is simply a misunderstanding of what the practice is. So when newcomers arrive here or beginners come, we try to encourage them simply to begin. Just begin. Don't worry too much about questions. Forget the questions. And rather than questions, simply trust the intuition that brings you here. This is what we try to tell visitors, newcomers. When we start to trust our own intuition in that way, the practice then becomes inside and is no longer some technique outside. Every form of life, humans and animals and insects and trees, fishes, all life has to satisfy the physical needs of living in order to survive and to continue. So we all have to eat and drink and sleep, treat illnesses, find a way to support ourselves. And these are universal needs, and we share them with everybody, with all the creatures. These are universal needs. They are natural, and we, when we are given life, we have a responsibility to take care of these needs. For us, we understand that we should take care of them with an attitude of practice and not be casual. And at the same time, we need to realize that practice is not about satisfying personal needs. In other words, the needs that relate to the ego or to our personality. Practice is not about satisfying those needs, because those are the needs of a discriminating mind. The mind that says what it likes and what it doesn't like. So practice is not about satisfying those kinds of needs. Everybody who comes through this practice, I don't think there are any exceptions. Everybody who comes to this practice, it's because we feel unsatisfied in some way. Something is missing in our life, in our personal life. And so we are seeking for it. Where, how do I fill out my life? Where is that missing thing? And the usual way for humans to pursue or to satisfy this need is to try to obtain some new thing, to fill in some gap, pursue some new thing, fill in the gap and try to become whole. And of course, in our culture, in the modern world, we call this the pursuit of happiness. But a thing that we think we need, a thing is not what is missing. Like a piece in a jigsaw puzzle. You do a jigsaw puzzle and say, oh, I'm missing a piece. I have to find that piece. So you get on your hands and knees and you look all around on the floor for this piece. It's not like that. A thing is not what is missing in our life. And if we pursue too many things, we can get ourselves into trouble. For example, you invite some of your friends to come to your house for dinner, and you want to make them your favorite soup. I'm going to treat my friends to my favorite soup. So you take out the recipe that you know very well, you follow it very carefully, and when you're finished, the soup is fine. But then you think, can I make it better? Uh-oh, can I make it better? So you add another ingredient, and you taste it, and you say, maybe I can make it better than that. And you add another ingredient. And if you go too far with that, pretty soon you ruin the soup. Another ingredient is not what is missing. And when we understand that point, we have arrived at practice. And when we start practice with some amount of determination and willingness to stick with it for a time, the direction of our concern will change. We go from trying to resolve some kind of personal issue or personal need, looking for something to fulfill a hole in ourselves. Our direction changes to expressing our true self. we want to express our life rather than add some more ingredients to what we already have. We express our life. We want to live an authentic life. The life that exists before a personal you arises or personal needs arise. With our practice, given some time, we begin to see that these so-called needs were just some things on the surface. They don't matter so much at all. When we recognize that, they no longer trouble us. And we are no longer concerned with questions. And our attitude becomes one of just continuing, setting aside questions and setting aside trying to gain something. And before we have this understanding, which is quite fundamental, we are always caught up in the desires of our personal self. So our practice is about loosening these attachments to the personal me or the personal you. You know, life does not require us to have an ego. It's not required. And we may think so, but that's a misunderstanding. So we are always asking our ego, what do you need? Rather than saying, you're not needed. So the teaching of Buddhism and the teaching of Zen is to live the bodhisattva way of life based on selflessness, the vision of no self. Selflessness means that our life is not driven by desire. It is peace of mind and joy and creativity. When we hear a well-known teacher speak in this way, it feels right, you know. It feels inspiring. It gives us a vision of how life is and how it can be for us. And it provides us the motivation to practice. Our practice becomes pure when it is not based on our own personal need. But despite motivation, despite some motivation we might have, if our practice is not sincere, there will be an obstacle. The obstacle of our ego, of our self-centered orientation. So we tell ourselves, I will practice sincerely. I make a vow to practice sincerely. But then we tell ourselves, yes, but it's not convenient. We always wind up trying to create some excuse because of the additional effort it requires to practice. So we may feel inspired by what we hear or read, but then find a reason to not accept what it is we should do. This, yes, but, is a big trap that we are always falling into, mostly without knowing it. So, for example, if you talk to your friend and you say, you know, my house is really messy. I'd invite you over for cup of tea, but my house is really messy. And your friend says, well, why don't you straighten it? And you say, well, yes, but that takes a lot of work. And then your friend says, well, why don't you hire a house cleaner? And you say, yes, but that costs money. Always some excuse. So if you go ask somebody who you respect, how can I find a peace of mind? And that person says, practice letting go of your desires. And you say, yes, but that takes time and effort. Or you say, yes, but what if nothing happens? We always fall into that yes, but trap. When we practice this way, we start to notice how we fall into that trap, and then we have a chance to break that habit. Yes, but this yes, but tendency is a desperate feeling to fill a need, personal need. We fear losing comfort, losing money, giving up control, giving up leisure, not getting approval, all these things. And this is a trap, because this is putting emphasis on the surface issues of our life, on the issues of our personality and our needs, which are temporary and have no substance. In other words, according to Buddhism, they are empty. So to get out of this trap, we have to emphasize what is inherent and fundamental, and recognize it is what we already have. Our physical needs in life are one thing, and we all have them. Taking care of our physical needs is taking care of what we have been given through our birth. But the needs that result from desires are something else. So when we feel that we have a need of some kind, we need to look carefully at it. Is this a real need, or is this fantasy? So our practice helps us, teaches us to see what is real and what is delusion. And it is important to keep our practice pure by not worrying about what we think we might gain or what needs we might take care of. When we feel something is missing in our life, it's not another ingredient. What's missing is giving up pursuing. When we give up pursuing, we notice there's nothing missing. So we should practice appreciating the soup of our life. Does anyone have a question? Yes, Victor.
You said continuous practice?
Yes.
What do you mean by continuous in that context?
No break.
Second?
No break.
No breaks.
We don't practice according to certain times of the day or according to how we feel, or according to whether it's convenient or not. We keep the mind of practice active all the time. Continuous. Okay. Thank you. Yes, please.
Are the real needs that different from the perceived needs?
What do you mean by the real need?
Same reward you might get from eating your soup might be experienced in the same way as the same reward you get from a perceived need. So you'll say that eating the soup is essential to your survival, but a lot of other needs manifest themselves in the same way and are rewarded in the same way.
The only real needs there are include appreciation for our life and gratitude for our life. So when we take soup, we say thank you. If we can have that attitude towards the soup, I'm grateful to have this nourishment. Then it's okay to have the other need that says, this is really delicious. But there's a basic need that says, you should express gratitude for what you've been given, for what we have been given. And that attitude, or that so-called need of gratitude, never ends. Whereas the perceived need of the tastiness of the soup, that comes and goes. That's temporary. Tomorrow the taste will be of chocolate or a cup of coffee. Thank you. Yes, please.
So I'm sure this question has been asked tens of thousands of times, but it's very easy to see this ability to live without pursuing things as yet another ingredient that is missing and that one has to pursue. So what does one do about that?
About what? Say it again, please.
Well. So when we come to Zen practice, often we are seeking some ability to live without pursuing things and to not be governed by our ego too much. And it's very easy to treat that as yet another ingredient that's missing from your life that you have to pursue. So what does one do about that?
Oh, you mean pursuing selflessness is another kind of pursuit.
Like another ingredient that you're missing.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good point. It is a trap we can fall into. But after a while, that need or that feeling diminishes. And our selflessness just emerges without our pursuit of it. You know, questions of that sort, they get resolved as we practice in very subtle ways. It's, for example, somebody may become interested in Zen practice because they have an idea that they want to become enlightened. So they come and they sit, I've got to get enlightened. After a time they say, what? I don't care about that. That's not a question for me anymore. So that happens just through the activity of practice. So the answer to the question of what does one do about that? Is just sit. And you're right, that question has been asked a thousand times and always answered the same way. Just sit, just sit. And thank you. Victor.
Is it possible to be appreciative and grateful for our life in the midst of difficulty, like when you have a lot of anger or sadness or any of those things?
Yes.
It is?
Yes. That's one of the things we learned from our practice. No matter what happens to us in life, we remain grateful to the gift, even though tragedies occur and we suffer. It's possible and absolutely necessary. Thank you. Jayashree.
You mentioned that I like the analogy of the jigsaw puzzle and the missing ingredient. So it's when you look around, though, it seems like there's a lot of people that who obviously aren't here that don't seem to have that missing ingredient and yet seem to be perfectly content in their pursuits. And so what is it that makes some people feel that missing ingredient and some people just don't? And is that something that can be changed, or is it something that, I mean, that's the part that's always puzzled me.
When people seem to have everything they need in life and their life is successful and they're satisfied, that's fine. When people are trying to be that way and they say, it's not working, there is something missing, there is something else, and they turn their attention to try to discover what that is, then they're starting a journey to find satisfaction outside of the everyday things that are supposed to give us satisfaction. So some people sense that there's something missing, and some don't have that sense. And we don't say one is right and one is wrong. It's if we come across someone who says, there's just, I feel something is missing in my life, I seem to have everything I need or want, but there's something not quite right. But it's too much trouble to pursue that. That's the person we have some empathy for. Thank you. Yes, please.
If we give up the pursuit of something, is there such thing as a sense of accomplishment in Zen practice?
We have to be careful of that. It comes up. But we can quickly let go of it when we understand there really is nothing to attain. There really isn't. But that comes up quite a bit. If we look at ourselves today and say, gee, I'm so much more comfortable and confident than I was a year ago. And that feels good, and that's okay. And then we tell ourselves, hold on, don't get carried away by that. Give up your pride, give up your accomplishment, and just keep going. So it does happen, but we learn to let go. Thank you. Yes, Umar.
So, less lately, some question will pop up in my mind as to why this or why that, or why am I doing this and why am I doing that, and it's just this, what happens is that I'll stop pursuing it, but I just remind myself, it's like sitting in meditation, stop pursuing it. Drop the question, and the answer shows up itself sometimes, and most of the time, 85% or 100%, the answer shows up. But lately I've been feeling that, you know, it's like you were just answering Karen's question, it's like it can become a sense of pride too, that it's just because of my practice that I was able to do this. It's not that, it's just that thing is much more like it's about letting go. But even the whole idea of letting go, I can't become too attached to it because I know I can turn that into pride and selfishness and say, I'm so intelligent that I have learned how to let go, so things show up. And just, I can become proud of that too. But it's as you were saying, it's a trap. It can become a trap.
When something goes right, we feel, oh, great. And we may feel some accomplishment. Oh. Rather than take pride, personal pride, best thing to do is to turn outward and say, I want to thank all the people that have made this practice possible for me. I'm grateful for them, for allowing me to find my way. That feeling never fades. And that's the kind of feeling that sustains us. Thank you. Oh, yes, please.
I think a lot of my friends, and probably a lot of our friends, have fallen into a trap of separating the small self, small mind, from the big mind. And the more they achieve, the more things they have, the more accomplishments and goals they can achieve, the more they separate themselves. And it's a very common Western thought, it seems, to rise above, to be the top dog, to be the... When happiness is found in just being ordinary, being an ordinary person, nothing special. And a lot of my friends, they're kind of like ducks. You see a duck on a pond, and it looks very graceful, but they're paddling like crazy underneath, right? They try to sustain this image of calmness and success and material achievement and these kinds of things. And it's almost a delusion we have that we look at them and we say, he's got me. He's got all the money he could ever spend, all the material things, pretty spouse, whatever it may be, he's got a name, but underneath that, you don't see the trappings, you don't see the emotional toll. And usually it manifests itself when something happens. There's a death, there's a financial setback, there's some other issue in your life, and everything crumbles. So I guess my question is, given the Western mindset, and particularly the capitalist mindset, in my business, the capitalist mindset is so goal and achievement driven. How do you separate yourself from that? How do you become more a part of the big mind when the context of the place we live in is so small mind centric?
Boy, that's the biggest question. Seriously, that you know, before the 1950s or so, when this practice started to find its way to the Western world and had thousands of years of tradition in Asia, where the people who were involved with the practice, the monks, what they said, I'm not going to be involved in that. I want to live in the monastery. I'm not going to get caught up in that. But what we're trying to do is answer your question. How do you bring this spiritual practice to that environment? We're all trying to figure out how to do that. And right now, we've learned that we just have to keep trying to find the way. You know, we don't want to drop out, but we don't want to become overwhelmed by it. So where's the balance? Yes, it's the question of the day, and the results aren't in yet. Just have to keep trying. Thank you. Yes, please.
So you just mentioned there were monks who decided not to get involved with the real life. So could you talk about why they did that, and is that the right way, or is this the right way, or?
Well, I don't know exactly, except I have some ideas. They're following hundreds of years of tradition. Like, if you really want to do this practice, you have to separate yourself from the attractions and the excitement of everyday life. Those things will corrupt you. So get away from there and come into the monastery, close the door behind you. Some of the monks might have said, None of the jobs available out here, clerk, warrior, merchant, I don't like those career opportunities. I'm going to go. Maybe that was part of it. And maybe some said, I really want to live a pure life, an authentic life. I don't want to be distracted by those things. So I give up marriage. I give up comfort. I give up having all the food I want when I want it. I allow myself to be guided by certain rules that they're going to give me because I want to have a very pure life. I want this life to be right. I don't want it to be wasted. That's very sincere. There may be more answers than that. But today we're saying that's not an option for us. This is the capitalist world, like you said. It's not the world of Asia. This is a modern capitalist world, and we have to find a different way. So it's serious, but we can have a good time doing it. We can enjoy each other in our search. Thank you.